As we reach deeper into both the ethical and the personal aspects of the right of terminally ill patients to what advocates term death with dignity, I'm pleased to be able to welcome the Reverend Tim Kutzmark to State of Belief Radio. The Reverend Kutzmark is a longtime pastor in the Unitarian Universalist Association, and he's confronted the issue of end-of-life decisions for persons with incurable conditions as part of his ministry in the only denomination in this country that has overtly expressed support for the right to end one's life under specific circumstances. Tim, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure and honor to be with you.
Your own personal stand on this position has changed over the years. Would you summarize what you once believed and what led to a change in those beliefs?
I can remember when I was in seminary at Harvard Divinity School, one of the first courses I took was an ethics class. And one of the issues that we debated and had to write a paper on was the idea of death with dignity, or the opportunity to hasten one's death if you were terminally ill. And at the time, I argued quite strongly against it. I think at that time, I felt that allowing the natural course of one's life to play itself out was the proper, the spiritual, the more elevated thing to do, to trust that you would be able to bear all that would happen, that one's own faith would be strong enough to carry through no matter how much pain, discomfort, or extended dying process there would be. And it really felt to me to be contrary to what at the time I would have said was God's will, and that as human beings, the protection of life was one of the fundamental building blocks of civilized society, and to take a life knowingly would be the first chip in that foundation. Mm-hmm. What changed for me was, part of it was my ministry with families in my congregations, and part of it was really a personal experience, and I'd love to be able to tell you the personal experience.
I'd love to hear it, because I was going to ask you what really was central in you changing your heart, and that would help.
I was mentored when I was much younger and had come to the Boston area by a really remarkable college professor by the name of Arthur Friedman, who was a professor of Shakespeare, an intellectual, a passionate man of words. He was also the theater critic for one of the major papers here in the Boston area, and was just a really generous, kind, giving individual, and was really a father figure to me. And we had a really wonderful friendship as well. And I remember several years into our friendship, and this was a man who was never at a loss for words, and I saw him and he looked ashen, and I said, you know, what's the matter? And he just handed me this piece of paper that said Parkinson's disease, and then proceeded to tell what Parkinson's disease was. And my friend Arthur lived for 15 years with Parkinson's disease, which is a horrible degenerative illness. In the early years, he was able to continue to teach and still live a vibrant life. But slowly, everything that gave his life meaning was slipped away. He had to stop teaching. He got to a point where his memory was befuddled as his body slowly stopped functioning. And he was so unhappy because he knew what awaited him, a really horrific death. And when the time came where he could no longer swallow, because you basically lose control of muscles, he made the decision to stop eating and drinking, and that way he could hasten his own death naturally. But he waited, I would say, for probably 3 miserable years before he could no longer swallow, and he would have liked to have hastened his death long before that. And to allow oneself to starve and dehydrate is a really horrific experience to undergo and to watch. And I watched his life wither away to a point where he was basically curled in the fetal position in a bed, just waiting and waiting for his stop working because he was no longer drinking any water. And it was cruel. And this illness took a vibrant, contributing, life-filled individual and it literally reduced him to a shell of a human being. And he did not have the option when things got so bad to say, it's time for a graceful and dignified exit. And so really watching that experience was the key thing that caused me to realize that not all deaths are pretty. Not all deaths are painless. And I've been with congregants in hospice, and I'm a huge fan of hospice, and they do extraordinary work. But the reality is medication cannot relieve the pain for all people. And I've been in the hospice with congregants, you know, with advanced cancer, that when the nurses try to move their bodies because of bed sores, bones break, they would scream in agony, and there's nothing that any medication could do to prevent that kind of, I would say, inhumane pain.
Yeah. Tim, as you described that so vividly and what it did to bring about a change of mind and heart in you, I was just sitting here thinking, I'm a pastor myself, and I've never understood how people who really do compassionate ministry can live with much dogma except the dogma of compassion and sensitivity and care. At the same time, you and I both hear these ethical arguments on this issue that are set before us with passion and with great conviction. I'm curious as to how you talk about those important ethical arguments and how you counter them.
You know, I'm thinking back to an instance where I testified at the Massachusetts State House before a panel of legislators. Some were quite vehemently opposed to the idea of death with dignity. And for me, I think it comes down to the safeguards that you put around the possibility of hastening one's own death, that it's a very limited criteria that are permitted this right, and it's carefully regulated. There are multiple physicians who have to be sure that this person's life is terminal and will be ending in the very near future. It's not something that should be taken lightly. At the same time, it is something that for a very small few who might choose to do this, I believe with those safeguards around, folks should have the right to meet death in the manner that is real and authentic for them.
Tim, you live and work in Massachusetts. What's the status of the Death with Dignity movement there?
Well, we lost 2 years ago the ballot initiative, and it was interesting because when the campaign began, the majority was in favor of Death with Dignity. Unfortunately, the funding came from folks who were against it. You know, the Catholic Church was a primary funder, and the TV and radio was flooded with advertisements that, quite frankly, were distorted and spoke some real untruths and terrified people. And so we did end up losing. I know that we're working in the State House to try to bring it before the legislature. Compassion and Choices, which is one of the national advocacy groups, is very active here in Massachusetts and has some extraordinary leadership. And for all of us, our fingers are crossed that that sometime in the near future that this is going to happen. And I think, you know, Massachusetts being, you know, its reputation for being a fairly liberal state, it's going to happen. It's just going to be a matter of time.
Is the Unitarian Universalist Association taking an active role on this issue?
Back in 1988, which is certainly a long time ago, the denomination took a stand in support of Death with Dignity. It has not been something that has been a major initiative in terms of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Association, although certainly ministers and congregations have become involved in the issue. So it's not a denominational effort, but it's much more on the congregational level. And I might add, it was interesting 2 years ago because I preached and had forums for the congregation here. And, you know, within our congregation, not everyone was supportive of it. And I would say that most people were confused and unsure. And there needed to be a lot of conversation, a lot of spaciousness for people to talk about the fears and the concern of a slippery slope that this would lead to, you know, other forms of sanctioned killing. So even within our denomination and within our congregations, not everyone is 100% behind it.
And I've been listening carefully to what you've said and how you've said it, and you made very clear that this is not a choice for all people, probably, but it is a choice for a select number of people. I'm wondering, when you watch what happened this week with Brittany Maynard's story, you maybe have seen her moving videos.
Yeah.
Is there still any part of you that struggles with this?
You know, I don't, because I have seen what I would call good deaths, where there's peace and comfort involved, and I have witnessed really horrific deaths. And for someone facing that possibility of a horrific death, knowing there is the possibility to have their life end a different way gives comfort, and I'll tell you, gives people strength. I've been with congregants who have made the choice to explore the option, have learned how to get the kinds of medication they need that they could use in case they ultimately chose to hasten their life, and none of them have. But there also was an incredible peace that came from knowing they could choose to be in control of the process. And so I don't hesitate anymore. To me, it's life is sacred, and I think we profane the sacredness of life by forcing people to suffer.
I'm sure that some people listening to this radio broadcast are saying, I want to know more about this. Are there resources available for patients and families that want to understand more about this?
Absolutely. The organization that I would direct folks to is Compassion and Choices. You can Google that. They do great education. They present the materials in a very accessible way. And their name says it, Compassion and Choices. They're offering choice, but it's done with great love and humanity.
The Reverend Tim Kutzmark is pastor of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Reading, Massachusetts. He has served as chaplain at Hasbro Children's Hospital in Rhode Island, and he is the past chaplain at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Massachusetts General Hospital. Tim, this is a difficult subject, and I want to thank you for the sensitivity and the honesty that you've brought to this discussion. You've helped a lot of people.
I thank you for having me and creating the space to have this kind of a conversation.